Yeah, wash your money.
Wash your money. Wink. Gambling, drugs, money. We're talking about all of it today. Welcome back to Royals Weekly. I am your host, Mike Mead. And joining me is sometimes a man who is the true inspiration for the 1993 Toby Keith classic, Should Have Been a Cowboy, my good friend Alex Duvall. Hi, Alex.
It is true. Me and Toby go way back from our days doing rodeo in the Oklahoma desert. That's not, none of that is true, but that's fine.
None of that is
I
true.
I mean, well.
Well, I mean, it's partially
it is
true.
Partially true. I mean, did do rodeo with Toby Keith and his horses who drink whiskey, so. Or no, it was beer. Beer for his horses.
It was beer.
Whiskey for his.
Yeah, he drank the whiskey.
He drank the whiskey.
There we go. Yeah.
They drank the beer. Yeah.
Alex Duvall, noted rodeo legend. Let's just say that. on this week's episode, we will discuss, I'm going to call them mixed results because I'm a nice person for the week for the Royals. We'll have a Q&A with Alex because we all know that's what people really want anyway. And then we'll preview next week's games. I figure we haven't talked to Alex in a while. Let's just get what he thinks on the record so that we can throw it back in his face later on. That's my thinking there. But first, a reminder to follow us on all social medias. We're at Mark's even social meeting it up from Spain right now. So if you guys are seeing those tweets from Mark and realizing they're coming out at weird times, it's because tonight when I texted him at about 7, he was like, I'm going to bed. And it's probably like 2 in the morning because that's where Mark usually goes to bed. So yeah, he's on flip time, but he's still keeping up. I'm doing the threads thing, but man, it's a desolate wasteland over there, which is fun, but people engage with me on threads so I don't get too out of control. But a quick reminder that Royals Weekly is brought to you by Knapp Family Wealth. Alex, can you think of anything more important than securing your financial future?
Wearing my six-shooter and riding my pony on a cattle drive?
Ooh, no, but I like where your head is. I love that you're keeping with the Toby Keith theme. Okay, securing your financial future is one of the most important steps someone can take for themselves and their family, and Knapp Family Wealth is ready to help you pursue it. This isn't some big faceless corporation we're talking about here. Knapp Family Wealth is run by J.C. Knapp. He's a huge baseball fan, and he's been helping people plan for their financial future for 20 years. He can help with retirement planning so you don't have to work until you're dead, education planning so your kids learn to read better than I'm reading right now, investment management so you can get all the money out of your mattress and get it working for you. Don't spend another day thinking you've got it all figured out because trust me, you don't. Check out Knapp Family Wealth at knappfamilywealth.com. That's K-N-A-P-P familywealth.com. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA/SIPC. Now, we're going to start this week off like we always do with roster news. And there was actually quite a bit of interesting news this week. And I have a feeling there will be kind of interesting news as we move in and finish out the year. Start us off, Singer came back from the paternity list. Congratulations to the Singers, although didn't perform also so great this week after that. But I think he's probably pretty happy with his week either way. As a result, Samad Taylor went back down to Omaha, hasn't shown a whole lot at the major league level, but he's still pretty young. Another one that I didn't think was all that interesting, but some people were talking about, Daniel Lynch got moved to the 60-day injured list, effectively ending his season. Probably needed to be moved there, not any real benefit to throwing him again this season. The one that kind of was a little interesting to me, Matt Beatty was optioned to Omaha, and Nick Prado was recalled after his rehab assignment in Omaha. Alex, what do you think of Prado coming back and Beatty going down at this point? He's only had one appearance. He was 0 for 3 with 3 strikeouts against a really good pitcher in Toronto. So what do you think?
I mean, at this point, any at-bats you're giving to Matt Beatty are wasted. They could be given in any capacity to Tyler Gentry, to Logan Porter, to Nick Prado, to your mom, who I know we're going to talk about later. I mean, the physical therapist, miracle of the year.
The physical prowess.
And so,
just
look,
unreal.
Matt Duffy's not playing anymore, which is good. He should not be, but those roster spots are a waste. They are just a glut of nonsense, and the less of those that we have, the better. So, I mean, at this point, I'm starting to question kind of what Nick Prado's role is in this organization moving forward. But as long as it's like literally anybody but Matt Beatty or Matt Duffy, I'm good.
Would you have rather had Gentry up here? Because I know, you know, we all know Mark is a huge Tyler Gentry guy. I like Gentry. I probably would have preferred him over Prado for this one. I would have optioned Prado to AAA and let him work on some stuff. What do you think?
Yeah, but they're running Nick Lofton out there at first base. So I kind of understand not wanting Nick Lofton to have to play first base and getting Salvador Perez the ability to go back behind home plate on occasion. You know, I get it, but yes, I would have rather seen Tyler Gentry's bat this time around just to see what you got. You may as well. I don't understand why you wouldn't at least take inventory of what you got. Get him up here, let him get a taste of it. That way, next year when spring training rolls around, it's a little bit easier to transition him to the big leagues on opening day if you wanted to, unless, and I won't go there, but there is an unless, and we can talk about that later.
Yeah, and I think when Fermin went down, I think that was Prado may have been their only option once Fermin went down, because you need Salvi behind the plate so much after that. We'll talk. I might as well just bring it up now. There are reports today that Logan Porter will be coming up as well, and he's kind of a help because he can play both catcher and first base if you need him to. So fits kind of both of those roles. Great for Logan Porter too. It hasn't been official yet, but it looks like it's going to happen tomorrow. Great story there. Walked on at Division II baseball, you know, worked at Surprise Stadium, I think they say. Mm-hmm. And he's produced in minor league baseball for the most part. So I'm excited to see him. The only other real roster news that we had was the huge gut punch that we got on Saturday with Austin Cox being placed on the 60-day IL with a torn ACL. And if you got a chance to see that play right away, it was in, I think, pretty much everybody's mind because it looked pretty bad. He just tumbled on trying to get to first base on sort of a routine grounded to first. Mm-hmm. Also with that, Freddie Fermin was put on the 10-day IL with a broken finger. And this is one that kind of surprised me. Brad Keller was reactivated. That's interesting to me, as was Tyler Cropley from AA Northwest Arkansas. Couple things here, Alex. First, what do you think of those moves? Secondly, can you tell us a little bit about Tyler Cropley as an expert on Royals minor league baseball?
Yeah, he's already back down to the minors in favor of Logan Porter.
Oh, yeah,
Porter.
I forgot because so, yeah. Logan Porter up. Yeah, I forgot about that.
And I think it was Kevin O'Brien that pointed out on Twitter that it was probably a passport thing. Logan, yeah. You're going to the big leagues. I don't have a passport. Like, can you imagine that being your call? Like, oh, my gosh. Like, I could have been there already, and I forgot. I don't have a passport. Like, Logan, my guy, if you're that close to the big leagues, we got to get passports, dog. We have got to be on top of the passports. You can't risk this, but – it sounds like Cropley's going right back. As far as Brad Keller, that is subtraction by addition. Like sometimes it's the other way around. That is bad. That is very bad. I was really digging what Austin Cox was doing, and Brad Keller has just been, there's nothing that you can gain from seeing more Brad Keller. You know exactly what he is. If you put him out there and he's good, and all of a sudden somebody says, hey, we might throw $3 million at him to come pitch in our bullpen next year, when you could have potentially had him, if that were to happen, right? Let's just say he's good all of a sudden. You could have had him on the cheap because nobody would have known, and now you're going to expose him? Like, I think that's it's weird at best. I would have just DFA'd him and moved along. But, yeah, sucks for Austin Cox. I was really digging him.
Me too. And I'm a noted not, I was not a noted Austin Cox fan before this year. I always thought he was kind of an org guy. You know, I didn't think he would ever make it in Major League Baseball, but I think he's shown the ability maybe to have a role in a bullpen this year. And I think that's good. He has at least a plus pitch in the curveball. So really, really sucks to see him go down with something that's likely to push into the beginning of next year. Real quick question on the Brad Keller thing. Do you have some sort of sick, twisted fascination with wanting to see him pitch at the major league level again? Because I almost do. The reports have been so bad from minor league baseball this year on him, on his rehab stuff, that I haven't seen any of that. I almost just want to see what it looks like. And maybe that's like a little morbid fascination. I don't want anybody to ever perform badly, but the reports are that he's doing things that make you feel like it's a little bit more mental hurdle than what we want to see in Major League Baseball. And that could turn into an atrocious day for him if he's out there and that happens.
Didn't they decide that we weren't going to torture prisoners anymore? Like they, I thought we weren't doing that. I thought we were done torturing prisoners. And right now, Brad Keller is a prisoner of baseball, and to put him on a major league mound might be torture. This might break the Geneva Convention. I mean, there could be like war crimes asserted to the Royals if they put him out there.
Yeah.
And especially, can you imagine if he, like, let's just say he goes out there, he walks the first four or five batters and they have to go get him. Like, I would press charges if I was Brad Keller. That's where I'd be.
And that, people, if for those of you who haven't paid attention to what he's been doing down in the minors since he left Major League Baseball, or since he left the Major League roster, that's what it's been. It's been, can't get him through an inning, can't throw a single strike at times. Like, really, really bad stuff. So I hope it's not that way. I hope he comes out and plays well if he gets an opportunity. He may be a break glass in case of emergency kind of guy anyway right now. But, woo, that's not good that he's coming back up here, that's for sure.
That's assault, brother.
Yeah, no kidding. let's take a look at the week in general. The Royals were 2-4 this week, bringing their overall record to a robust 44-100. That's right. Officially broke the 100 loss barrier today. I said it was a mixed bag for the Royals, who seem to be really scrambling at the end of the year. I mean, they are calling up Brad Keller again, so that seems like a scrambly kind of move to me. They started off winning 2 of 3 this week against the lowly Chicago White Sox, who we'll talk a little bit more about later. After that, they went to Toronto and got swept by the Blue Jays. Being from Canada, the Blue Jays were very polite about it all. You know, they let us think we might win today before they crushed us. And so, Alex, what do you take away from this week with only 18 games left in the 2023 season?
I know Cole Reagan's outing ended weird. I mean, he was slipping all over the mound. He didn't ask them to do anything about it, which, whatever. I could not care less about those last three pitches that he threw there. But to hold that Toronto offense to one hit through the first four or five innings, I mean, this is legit. And I kept joking on Twitter that I was looking for reasons that the other shoe was going to drop, looking for declining fastball metrics, looking for declining spin rate, looking for a statistic that might lead on that he's getting lucky. I can't find it. Everything he's doing in this sample that we have is legit. There is no reason that if he keeps throwing the way he's throwing, we should expect significant regression. Now, the curious thing will be is, okay, next year, if he starts on the opening day roster and he throws, you know, he makes 10 starts in April and May, and we get into June and he's making that 10th, 11th, and 12th start, can he hold the velocity? His 98th pitch today was 99 miles an hour. I don't know. Nobody can say they know. Oh, yeah, no, we can expect it. Well, no, you can't. We don't know that he can do this over a full season. But if he does, there's no reason to expect this isn't legit. The stuff is legit. It's just a matter of, will his body allow him to continue doing this? And I think what you saw today against that lineup is this stuff will play, and there's not a lot hitters are going to be able to do about it.
Yeah, and we talked about, I think, last week. This is the most excited I've been about a Royals starting pitching prospect since, you probably have to go back to Zach in the 2009 season when he won the Cy Young. Yes, I was extremely excited about Yordano because the stuff was so electric. Yes, Danny Duffy, when he first came up and you saw the potential that he had, even though he was really pitch inefficient in that early part of his Royals career. But you could see the stuff. Those were exciting. But man, I've never seen a guy come up and just mow people down as coldly as he does. And then just, I mean, he just looks so damn good. Very exciting. At least there's a small glimmer of hope. We did get some glimmers of hope this week. So can you just lay it on us? Who is your strong performer from the week, Alex?
I went with MJ Melendez, and that may sound funny to some because over his last 7 games, he's only hitting 190, and over his last 15 games, he's only hitting 220. And I do think there's something to, during this hot stretch, he's had a batting average on balls in play that is not sustainable for what he does. So as good as he's been, it's not quite that sustainable. But what he did do this week is walk 5 times in what, like 26 at bat or 26 plate appearances. So a walk rate right around 25%. I mean, he has totally transformed his approach. And when you hit, you're more likely to be walked, right? So he has an on-base percentage in his last 7 games of 346. despite a batting average of 190, that is outstanding, and an ISO to go with it of 143. So this is more sustainable, right? It's not sustainable to walk at 7% and have a batting average on balls in play at 340. That's never what he's going to be. MJ is going to make his money on a batting average on balls in play around 260, 280, but he's going to hit for a lot of power, and he's going to take his walks if he's going to be an integral part of the lineup moving forward. And this week he showed the plate discipline come back. Still a few strikeouts, but 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. I'll take that every day of the week for who he is, because that's what he has to do, is be sure that he can find free bases in between not hitting a ton of singles like a smaller, slappier hitter might.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought him up too, because one, that's why we ask you to co-host in these times, because you come up with the gems, the nuggets that other people aren't going to find on like an MJ Melendez like that. And I'm also glad you brought it up, because that feeds in well to my strong performer for the week, Nelson Velasquez, because he has a similar profile in that he strikes out quite a bit. He doesn't walk all that much. Nelson Velasquez this week was 5-for-19 with 3 home runs, 5 RBI, 2 walks still, which isn't bad for him, 6 strikeouts. His K rate this year is still 26%. But here's the difference between MJ Melendez and Nelson Velasquez. Velasquez's ISO is 373. That is unreal. And we've seen it in the production. Every time the guy touches the ball, it feels like it leaves the yard. So that's something that is so wonderful. We were talking it up big time when they made the trade for Nelson Velasquez, but it looks like you might have a corner outfielder who's terrible, not terrible in the outfield, but not good in the outfield, that can actually hit the shit out of the ball again. When was the last time the Royals had that? Jorge Soler for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to that,
yeah.
You're talking Jermaine Dye. So, you know, it's been a while. So it'll be nice to see that if he can start this up again at the beginning of next year. I'm not saying he's an everyday guy, but if he's hitting like this, he's a 5 times a week guy, at least in the best mm-hmm. matchups you can find him. They won 2 games this week. So not everybody's been great, especially on the pitching side. Alex, tell us about the pitcher that you've picked out as our weak performer of the week. But really, you could just say like since like at the end of July, maybe.
Literally since the trade deadline. And we can pull this up. Let's do that really quick, and then I'll tell you who it is. And it's Carlos Hernandez. So I think that may have given it away. But literally, I think if you split Carlos Hernandez first half, second half, it is shocking, like what happened to him the minute the trade deadline passed. It's like he blew his load trying to get traded. And then the minute they didn't trade him, he was like, screw it, I don't want to pitch anymore. So in the first half, before the All-Star break, walks per nine was 2.42. Second half, 6.16. In the first half, home runs per nine, 0.6. In the second half, 2.37. His whip, 0.99 to 1.68.
Oh, my gosh.
And his FIP went from... Yeah, his FIP went from 2.66 to 6.47. He has been awful. And in this last week, 6 innings, 6 runs, 5 walks, 4 strikeouts, and a whip of 2. He has been the no good, very bad Carlos Hernandez we all got to know and love as a starter. And that's the scary thing, is that when he was pitching really well, it was off the back of his fastball. And it's almost like all of a sudden he lost his command and everybody's just waiting for the fastball and then shitting all over it. So it's like, okay, if you're Carlos Hernandez, what on earth happened at the All-Star break? Did you go home and lift and mess up your shoulder? Did you eat a hot dog wrong and choke? And as you were getting the Heimlich, you popped a rib out of place? Like, what happened over the All-Star break that he went from like really good, like Kelvin Herrera good, right back into the pumpkin of Brandon Mauer past? Like, what happened on the break, Carlos? I want to know. I want so badly to understand, Carlos. I want to help. Like, let me help you. Me help do good, because this is so bad. It is so bad, because they had so many good – and I don't want to say offer explicitly, like, that the Yankees just had an offer on the table, accept or deny. But the conversations that were going back and forth on Hernandez were reportedly very strong. And if they would have traded, I think the average fan might have gone, what? And the fans who are kind of like you and me, like addicted, like it's heroin, would have been like, oh, that's a great move. I'm glad they did that. And now we'd be looking at it like, ha-ha, sucker. Like, you deal with it. We're going to take Cole Reagans 2.0 exactly. over here and go deal.
So, yeah, we'd be looking at it like we are the Reagans trade right now. Yeah, yes. And we've mentioned it just kills us to not give up a reliever like that. You might even be able to say, hey, they kept Hernandez so that they could still have a piece that was competitive for the back end of their bullpen. It's not. It's not competitive. And we kind of all knew that he was pitching on the pitchability of that fastball. But if anything changes with it, and Mark and I were talking about, well, if he loses a mile per hour or two in velocity, he's done. He can't do anything else. And so it wasn't that. As you mentioned, it's been the command of it. It's been just so bad that it's looking real bad for Carlos Hernandez. Hopefully he can figure something out, because if he doesn't, we're building from nothing next year. Nothing. There is nothing viable in that bullpen to hang your hat on next year if he's not something. So here is something to build on, though. We know he's going to be something. My weak performer for the week is Bobby Witt Jr., and I did that just so I could stay a little bit positive. He was 4 for 21. Three of those four hits were extra base hits. He had three doubles, a walk, four strikeouts, and no home runs. It was really just a week of kind of bad outcomes for Bobby Witt Jr. We want him to hit a couple more home runs so he can get to that, 30-30, or in this case now 30-40, because he stole his 40th and 41st base today. And he had a good day today. He went 2 for 4 today, I think. He had a double and a single. And so, yeah, I think Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be fine. I'm not worried about Bobby Witt Jr. Every once in a while, he's going to have to go back into the cage and remind himself how important his approach is. He's very interesting, though. And I think anybody who watches the games consistently can see this. His two strike approach is so vastly different from when he is hitting without two strikes that it is kind of insane. Because a single that he hit today is a ball you would actually expect Bobby Witt Jr. to hit out. And it was a hanging breaking ball, but he had two strikes. And so he takes this really handsy inside out swing and just puts it over the second baseman's head for a single. And I'm going, there's the two strike approach. He hits more balls to right field with two strikes now than I saw him do all last year. And it's actually been a very good thing for him. I think at his peak level of what is the ultimate Bobby Witt Jr., his approach will kind of stay the same all the time. But if this is what he has to do to be what he's been, I will certainly take it. Okay, let's move on. Alex, theme of the week. We like to make these either movie quotes or music quotes, but it's not a must. Doesn't have to be. Okay. What is your theme for this week?
I don't know that I have ever caught on to that. That might be something okay. that, like, while I'm driving and I'm listening and I'm waiting for the theme, I miss. Let me think if I can. Let's go. If it's the theme is supposed to be a song, I'll go with a song title by my Turnpike that Troubadours. Works. This is The House Fire. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all bad.
This is a thank you. All right, there we go.
Burn it down, because my original theme was there. It's just not good enough, and one of the reasons, and if you follow me on Twitter, one of the reasons I'm leaving the space is I am having a really hard time being negative about I'm having a hard time being positive about anything that's going on throughout the organization. And they are just not good enough, and they're not particularly close. I think what this, not just this week, but really, they went on that 7-game win streak, or was it 7 games where they just like, they hadn't won 3 in a row, and all of a sudden they win like 7, and we're like,
yeah, I think it was 7.
Yeah, they've been awful again ever since. and I think you can, and I hate to like point individuals out, but you can point at like Michael Massey is just not good enough. Alec Marsh, just not good enough. Daniel Lynch, I know he's been hurt, but the overall rotation, the assembly of the rotation is just not good enough. Even when Brady Singer is good, he hasn't been dominant outside of a couple starts. Like, it's just not good enough. The bullpen, certainly not good enough. And they have some individual parts that work, but the sum of these parts is not close to being good enough. And I think this week when you watch them play a Toronto team, you're like, man, Royals played pretty good. I thought they played pretty good this weekend. They get swept by Toronto? I wasn't paying.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, like, and honestly, honest to God, I didn't think they played terrible at all this weekend. I caught four or five innings on Saturday. I caught the game Friday, and I caught four innings-ish today after Mark texted me. He's like, I think they just name-dropped you on the broadcast. And so I tuned in, and they were talking about Alex Zumwalt, not Alex Duvall, which if you're in
Spain.
Well, the
Spanish translation.
Yeah, you know? And you've been hearing Spanish, it's probably the same thing, right? So, no, but I caught the last four innings of the game today, and I really didn't think they'd played terrible. Cole Reagans was really good again, and it's not even close to being good enough. So my theme for this week, but also probably for the offseason, and I know we'll talk about this in the coming months, but this offseason it's going to be the house fire. Just burn it down.
Grab a grandpa's auto five in the picture frame and get out of the house. All right.
Yep.
So I'm glad you brought that up because you know, I think it's in Shawshank Redemption when they say like, what's the worst thing you can give a person to basically torture them? And it's hope.
Hope.
And that's kind of what this team does when a Cole Reagan starts or when MJ Melendez is on like a little hot streak or Michael Massey hits a game winning home run. You're like, look, I can see them being good. Or Brady Singer has a two game stretch where he's dominant. Oh, look, they're going to be good. That's the hope they give you that crushes you as a fan because, you know, nobody does it to be a good team. Like a la, you know, the Astros or the Braves, or the Dodgers or the Rays or Cleveland, whatever. You have to have those guys that are going to be consistent. Right. And I've never been a guy that was like, you know, consistency is just coach speak. You know, I've seen it so much this year that I believe I'm a believer in consistency because if you can't get consistent starting pitching, give me consistency over ceiling, even like at this point, especially for a team like the Royals, give me consistency over ceiling because the hope that you keep giving and then pulling back is crushing me. All right. And I can't take it. I can't dream on an Alec Marsh and a Michael Massey forever. And you know, those guys, because it's just not there enough. You know, it's there to get you a 7-game win streak and then lose 15 of your next 20 is what it is. So my theme for the week is a play on a movie title. Clear and Present Failure is what I'm calling the theme for the week because they officially broke the 100 loss barrier today. And now it's just more of a game of how many can they lose is the question. And it's going to be fun to finish. And I do think the Royals have been more competitive in the second half. But as we were just stating, it's not enough. It's not even close to enough. And it's hard to even see when this team is going to be competitive for a playoff spot again.
Yeah, I'm correct.
Royals Weekly is brought to you by All In Physical Therapy. For one-on-one personalized physical therapy, we choose All In Physical Therapy. They took excellent care of our mother after surgery left her with pain and limited mobility in her arm. She loves to work out. Be active.
I got to tell you, Mike, I've never met your mom, but I am terrified of this woman.
Hey, I completely understand, and you should be. The excellent specialized care she got at All In Physical Therapy had her back to being active in no time.
Did I tell you that I met Chuck Norris, and she tells your mom jokes?
That sounds right, because you know what? He could not hold her in a game of anything, including karate, okay? That's, my mother would correct. Level that guy, even if he has his little Bowflex thing with him. All In Physical Therapy knows how to help athletes recover. It's owned and operated by Lee Summit's own Tommy Frevert, a former Arena League football player, Northwest Missouri State Bearcat. Gotta love that. And a hell of a guy. They have offices in both Blue Springs and Lee Summit, so get over there to work with Tommy. Tell your doctor you want to do your physical therapy with the best of the best at All In Physical Therapy. To learn more, give them a call at 816-427-5300. That's 816-427-5300 or visit their website at allin-pt.com. That's allin-pt.com. So some time has passed since the Major League Baseball draft when we last got to speak with Alex here with his expertise in the draft and minor league baseball. A lot has happened since then, and I know everybody is just clamoring to hear Alex's thoughts, and because I'm not very creative and couldn't think of anything else to do, we're just going to do a little question and answer session here with you. Okay. I want to know what you think of how the Royals season has shaken out so far. I have some ideas how you might view out the season so far, but I want to know the details. The team is on pace to lose more games than any Royals team in history, and that's a feat, ladies and gentlemen. So let's just get waist deep in the sewer that is the 2023 Kansas City Royals. Alex, give the Weekly Weirdos your impression of the season overall.
I like the idea of it being a clear failure. This is so obviously the worst case scenario. And I really do. If you went before the season, I think when we were making win projections and stuff preseason, you know, I think I said 77, something like that. And I think when I said 77, I think you could, in hindsight, probably chalk that up to like an 80th percentile outcome where I was like, I really think they could be pretty good. I think they'll put some pieces together. The pitching will be better than we expect. I think Jordan Lyles takes a step forward, and that doesn't mean he's going to be good, but just if he pitched to an ERA in the high fours all year, and if Brady Singer was good, and if Daniel Lynch was healthy, and I was right about Chris Bubich, then he gets hurt. And it's like, you know, I just thought some pieces would come together, and this is the worst possible outcome. The nice thing about it is you got some good intel, but now you have to use it. The Royals for so long play this game where they lie to themselves and they watch, and I hate that it sounds like I'm picking on Michael Massey, but it's just an example that it's on my mind recently. Oh, look, Michael Massey hit another double, hit another home run. It's like, yeah, I mean, he's a Major League Baseball player. Like, they'll do that sometimes. He's not good enough to play every day, and he's not versatile enough probably to play on the bench. So what he is at this moment is a 4A player. You have to treat him like that. Kyle Isbell is a fourth or fifth outfielder. You must treat him like that. There aren't enough guys to bank on making more improvements. You can no longer bank on them making significant improvements. Mike Moustakas was a number five overall prospect in baseball, the number two overall pick in the draft. He had a pedigree. There was a reason to believe that Mike Moustakas could turn it around. Michael Massey was a fourth round pick who was good, not great in the minor, was maybe even great, but not elite in the minor leagues. Is there a reason to think?
One year of great.
Yeah. Is there a reason to think he could be a 4-day guy platooning with like a combination of Nelson Velasquez, Nick Lofton, and Michael Garcia? Maybe. Maybe you play him on tough righties and you let his defense, you know, take care of itself. But you have to take guys like him and move on from them and go find your replacement. And speaking of his replacement, I'm going to lose my marbles the next time you ask me a question. I've already got my answer ready to roll. So the next question you ask is going to be, I'll save my rant for that. But as long as they use the intel they've gained, it was an evaluation year. Take your evaluations and burn it down. It's not good enough. It's not close, right? You have to use them and make the correct decisions. Take the Royals colored glasses off, move the pieces you need to move, make the improvements where you need to make improvements, and restart, because this particular core isn't winning anything. I tried so hard to like, well, they're 10th in F4 since the break, and they've been better, and then they have not been lately again. So they have shown me over and over again, this is not going to work. And the Royals front office staff needs to look at it objectively. Look, we love these guys. I get it. You fall in love with them. They come up through your system. They're good people. Business sucks. It's cutthroat. It's win or lose. This game is not. And I think that's why people got so fed up with Dayton Moore is what he made a comment on the pregame show last year. You know, did we sacrifice some wins for character? Yeah. It's like, what? Like, I don't care if they like each other, as long as they're not a threat to the community, like Aroldis Chapman, the domestic violence stuff. Like, there's a difference between, like, being a good guy, yeah, being Eric Hosmer.
Don't go get Julio Urias this offseason, but other than that.
Other than that, like, I don't care if Eric Hosmer is rude to the media. Like, it doesn't have anything to do with me. If you don't like it, don't talk to him. But he's winning. He's making baseball fun. And when baseball's fun, the kids get into it. When the kids get into it, it grows the city. Like, that's what John Sherman needs to put on the field and J.J. Piccolo, not good guys that don't bring anybody to the ballpark because nobody gives a rip if they're good people.
Yeah, and we've said this for years at the trade deadline. The Royals overvalue the guys that they have, and they have for years under Dayton Moore. I agree with you. This offseason, they need to look back at this and go, this is going to be hard. This is going to hurt. But that's what happens when you lose. You got to take your medicine. And you're going to have to take hard looks at, and I'll throw Melendez in there. I know he's been better, but you've got to take a hard look at Massey, Melendez, these guys that you were kind of counting on and say, are they doing enough? And I just point this out. Let's look at today. You have Kyle Isbell, okay? And you have Kevin Kiermaier, both playing in today's game, okay? Kevin Kiermaier may not be a, he may not be a superstar, okay? But he is a solid major league center fielder, okay? At the plate, you know, probably not maybe 90 to 100 weighted ones, runs created plus. Has Kyle Isbell been anywhere close to a Kevin Kiermaier at all, ever? No. That is what a starting major league center fielder looks like, ladies and gentlemen, and he doesn't stack up right now, okay? And it's not that any of these guys couldn't take a step forward, but you can't count on that. They have to take the step forward, then they get to play. You're not hoping they take a step forward at the major league level. Okay, you know, you're going to get me on one, okay? That's what's going to happen. You're going to get me on a little diatribe and go nuts. I got one saved for the very end of the show already, okay? The last time we spoke, Alex, was the draft in July. Okay, looking back at that draft from this year, what are your early impressions of those Royals selections? We did a little spotlight on this a couple weeks ago, but I want to know what the draft guru thinks of the Royals draft so far.
I was right again, Mike. I don't know how else to put it. Like, I'm not a big, I'm right, you're wrong guy. I was right, and the Royals were wrong again for how many years in a row? I don't even know. But
well, I've only been doing draft stuff with you for 2 years, and both years you've been right. And both the guys you said they should have taken are now friggin' just superstars. So
it's infuriating, dude. Jace Young,
yep,
is in Double A. He is got a 291 ISO. He's hitting 285 and a 158 weighted runs created plus. There's your second baseman. There he is. Okay, you liked Gavin Cross. All right, I got another guy for you, Mike. Matt Shaw was drafted this year. He's hitting 297 at Double A with a 270 ISO and a 143 weighted runs created plus. He has a better – well, I was going to make a joke in there, but that doesn't make any sense. I was going to – anyway, he's got – oh, Gavin Cross was drafted last year – and isn't even playing right now because he got sick or something. And they, I think what they're doing is putting him basically in Arizona or just working with him, right? Like, hey, get your hits in. We know it's been a terrible season. Like, we'll reboot. We'll get back to it in the fall. But that's your first pick from last year. And this guy, who could be your second baseman next season, Matt Shaw could be a big league second baseman for you by next July. He's raking the coals over in Double A as a 21-year-old who they just drafted out of Maryland. And he could be your second baseman next year, but no, he plays for the Cubs. Okay, so you don't like him either. You wanted Kyle Teal. How's Kyle Teal doing, you ask? Thank you for asking. Kyle Teal has a double-digit walk rate and is hitting 357 at Double A. He also just drafted this year. Kyle Teal, by the way, behind the plate at high A, where are my numbers at here? At high A, threw out 6 of 20 base runners and only, or had 11 total assists. He is not only looking like a defensive steal, a defensive wizard, because, it, by the way, in the minor leagues, like some teams like the White Sox, they'll tell their pitchers, don't even hold runners on, we don't care. So stolen base success rates in the minors are a little bit different than they are like at the big league level. He looks like he could be not only a defensive steal for the Red Sox, but his bat, I mean, he's just raking all over Double A. Everybody we wanted the Royals to take are already tearing up Double A, not high A, not low A like the Royals hitters are. They are tearing it up at Double A. Matt Shaw should start at Triple A for the Cubs next year, for the Iowa Cubs. He could be their big league second baseman. Well, they have Nico Horner. Hey, maybe they'll trade him to us. I don't know.
I don't know. They gave us Velasquez for Kwas. Maybe they will. I don't know.
God. And you know the thing? Hang on. One more
go
thing.
Go ahead.
The thing is, they were Preston, who, by the way, at Royals Miners, Preston Farr is incredible. He does great work. He put out today that Annie Rogers was interviewing Drew Saylor. Mike, can you tell me what Drew Saylor's title – what does he do for the organization?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to go with Royals Minor League Hitting Coordinator. Is that anything?
Yeah. He coordinates the offensive development for the Royals prospects. So tell me, Mike, why when Annie Rogers asked him about Blake Mitchell, his
comment was on his defense?
His compliments were about his defense. Oh,
I saw that, and I thought the exact same thing. I'm going, that seems like an interesting thing for Drew Saylor to say. Like, not only that, nobody cares. Nobody cares about that guy's catching ability right now. Only thing I care about is can he hit the ball.
Kyle Teal and Matt Shaw have better ISOs at double A than Blake Mitchell had batting average in the complex league. Yeah. That doesn't mean Blake Mitchell won't be good. But if you're trying to put a good team on the field, here are two very, very good college bats. Put them in your lineup by the end of next season and roll, Tide, roll. What are we doing? This is – and then, like, with Jace Young, I mean, can you imagine if they had Shaw and Young or Teal and Young?
I'd play one in left and one at second base, and I'd play them every day. And they're two fantastic right-handed bats, honestly, that are a little bit alike. And this team's pretty heavy on left-handed bats right now going into next year. So
no, well, Teal's a lefty.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking Shaw and Jace Young. Because I would have taken him back-to-back
Jace
years.
Young's a lefty, too.
Oh, he is? Sorry, I keep forgetting about that. Yeah. But no, good, okay. Even more balance. Like, that's the thing that always gets me is, like, we talked about how they didn't have any defensive positions. And, you know, Shaw played shortstop, but he couldn't play shortstop in the majors. Man, though, think about the offensive production you would have in those two guys. Just right there. You know what? Do you know what Matt Shaw is going to do in Wrigley Field?
Yes.
He's going to hit 25 home runs easily in Wrigley Field. Yeah, we all loved him coming out of Maryland. And yeah, a little disappointing there. Now, let's not all go doom and gloom. Are there any guys that you like from that draft that are doing some things for the Royals minor league system right now?
Kind of. We haven't even seen them all because Hunter Owen hasn't pitched. Blake Walters hasn't pitched. The Hero Wyatt kid hasn't pitched. So it's like, I think, but we haven't seen them either. And so they didn't sign a couple of their later draft picks who I was actually kind of excited about. What was the kid's name? The Oklahoma State commit.
I can't remember. He was their next to last pick, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah, doesn't matter. But I kind of liked him, and they didn't sign him. Carson Rockefeller has been fine. But one thing I want to stress, the more of Columbia that I watched, because Columbia early on was horrible, but later on, they got Spencer Nivens, they got Carson Rockefeller, they got Trevor Werner, and it was like, hey, this is kind of a fun team to watch, so I started watching more of them. Dude, the pitching in low A is awful, and so you got to take it. Like Spencer Nivens, I think, has actually been one of the most impressive guys to watch. His plate discipline is pretty good. He doesn't swing and miss a lot. He hits for power. His batting average is pretty low, but like all the intangibles are there, all the peripherals are there. Like, I think he's been pretty good. I think Carson Rockefeller's been good. I think Trevor Werner's been great. But it's like the low A pitching is so bad. I don't know what to compare it to.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's a reason Matt Shaw, Kyle Teal went straight to double A. The pitching at the lower levels is pretty bad. So it's some give and some take. Like, yes, I like them, but if that's what they're doing at double A, then should I really be excited about a 110 weighted runs created plus at low A? Probably not.
Yeah, I hear you. And the one that surprised me in that group was Werner. I really didn't think he was the kind of athlete. And we'll see if he is moving up into some of those tougher levels to really make an impact on Major League Baseball. Okay, trip down to the farm. We don't got to talk about guys that were drafted. Okay, who has impressed you the most this year in the Royals system? And who has maybe disappointed you a little bit or not been the player that you expected them to be this year?
Javier Vaz is a guy. He is really good, like defensively all over the field. Reminds me of a little of Samad Taylor, where defensively you can legitimately move him all over. In the outfield, he's a little raw, but he's still very good. He makes really flashy plays in front of him. It's behind him and into the gaps that get a little sporty in center. But still, if he's a second baseman, left fielder, perfect. At double A, it's still walk to strikeout ratio over one. He has the for the number of plate appearances. If you take every double A hitter with 90 plate appearances or 80, whatever it is, at double A this year, he has the lowest whiff rate. I mean, you can't throw the ball by him. In fact, I saw it the other day. I tweeted and said something like, somebody struck out Javier Vaz twice in the same game. Keep the ball. Like, that doesn't happen. Diego Hernandez is further away than I thought. He's also in double A. Defensively in center field, still very good. Still making some good contact, but the overall approach isn't very good, and the power has been zapped a bit since he came back from that shoulder injury. So he's
okay. I thought he got hurt. Yeah,
he's further away than I thought. I thought maybe there was a chance he could push Kyle Isbell for the center field job in spring training. No, not yet. He's not there. But he's still somebody I'm relatively high on. He's further away than I thought. And then if you want to go some arms. Ben Caderna is very good. I know the numbers aren't great and his strikeouts fluctuate, but I think sometimes they treat him like a James Shields type where he's legitimately good enough to probably get away power pitching to contact. And generally that's kind of an oxymoron. If you power pitch, you are going for swings and misses. Ben Caderna can power pitch to contact and generate a ton of weak swings. Bad contact, and I think his best comp for me right now is probably James Shields. I mean, it's really good stuff. Anthony Veneziano is been fine, but he's still got some issues that I don't know how he translates to the big leagues. Maybe he'd be okay, maybe he won't be, but I've cooled on him some here in the last couple of months.
Yeah, for Vaz, the lack of swing and miss is fantastic. I've always loved those guys who can stay in at bats just by kind of scrapping out foul balls left and right. One, if you get a lineup full of those guys, you're getting pitchers out very quickly in the fifth and sixth inning or even earlier, sometimes if you're really good at it. And so I've always loved a hitter like that. I don't know if I love him at second base. I think he can play second base. I would like to see him develop just a little bit more in center so that he's playing most of his games in center. But yeah, he's a guy that I'm high on now as well. I was not high on him coming out in the draft, but just seeing if you watch a game that he plays in and watch a couple of his plate appearances, you go, okay, that's a major league approach right now. And so that's always good to see. Okay. Last one that I'm going to give you here, because I don't even know we're having so much fun here. I don't even know how long. Oh yeah. We're going over for sure. Good luck editing it, Mark. we're heading back up to the majors. Actually, I got two more questions for you. Last week we played a game on like, do we extend, do we hold, or do we try and trade this current Royal? I want your opinion on this. Is there anyone on the current major league roster that you definitely think the team should extend or trade this offseason? And then what should they be looking for in return?
So I think there's three guys they should extend. I think it's Bobby Witt Jr. for duh. I think it's Vinny Pasquantino on a, I don't want to say team friendly, but I think at the moment you could probably get it team friendly and probably feel really good about just penciling him at first base DH. And then, by the way, if that's your guy, you can send Nick Prado to AAA again at the beginning of next season and keep working, keep developing those contact skills because they're not good. And then also, if you're looking for a gamble, so there's one where you're going to have to pay a lot for Bobby. You could probably get a decent deal for Vinny. If you're looking for a gamble, I would extend MJ Melendez this offseason. He's been awful for the most part. What's he got? Like negative 1.8 career F4. I mean, just in terms of overall value, it's very bad. In the second half, he's lowered his strikeout rate. He's raised his ISO. He's gotten a little bit luckier. He's walking more now. And he's been a good major league hitter. 124 weighted runs created plus. I would try to extend him now. Give him a little bit of security. Hey, man, you ain't got to worry about money no more. And you don't have to worry about your spot on this roster. You've made the team. You're going to start every game in the big leagues. And we are going to treat you kind of like we did with Hunter Dozier, where even if it's bad, we're going to let you play. And here's the thing with the Royals and where they're at is you can't just play it smart. You got to gamble sometimes, because what you need to do is extend MJ and then hope he goes off next year with the weight of the world off of his shoulders and goes nuclear. Like, that's what you need to happen. If you extend him and he's bad, well, I mean, you're already not good. What did you – I mean, what? You got one
– You lost money. That
yeah,
was it.
It's literally – I mean, you just cut bait. Like,
and he's kind of a – this is kind of a buy-low situation. Yeah. You're buying him low now and hoping that his value goes through the roof. And then, honestly, you then have a team-friendly contract to – if you do end up trading him. Like, if his value goes so high but you're paying him very little and you're not contending – you then trade an MJ Melendez for a package of prospects, and he becomes very attractive to a team that to any team, because he has a little bit of defensive versatility, although I don't know anybody wants him to catch, but he's got a team friendly contract. He's got the ability to hit and play multiple positions. That, yeah, I had never even thought of that. That may not be a bad type of gamble for a team like the Royals. Anybody you're thinking about trading?
Brady Singer, just because I'm kind of tired of looking at him. But
you know what? I don't know if I've ever seen anybody who – now, part of this isn't his fault in that he probably came to the big leagues too soon. But I don't know if I've ever seen anybody just not change as a pitcher. He just doesn't change. Mm-hmm. He's the same guy he was the day he stepped on that major league mound. As far as development goes, there hasn't really been any. There's none to speak of.
No, with Britain. None.
And, you know, he did have Cal Eldred as his pitching coach. Which, you know, but at this point, you've been in the organization for a while. Other guys have taken steps forward, big steps forward, some of them, and made changes at least. Even if they weren't effective, they were changes. You know what sucks, though? I don't think they can trade him. I do, not that there wouldn't be teams out there that didn't want him. I think there would be. They are so deficient in the starting rotation. I don't think they can give up anybody. He's yours.
Oh, I got a solution.
For okay, that. We'll talk about that. That leads us very well right into our last question here for Alex Duvall. Last question. It's a doozy. This is a tough one. Okay, who is the starting rotation on opening day for the 2024 Kansas City Royals? Now, caveat: if you don't get them all correct, you're contractually obligated to co-host another podcast with me. So think really hard. You have to do one next week anyway. But when I say another podcast, I'm talking it's going to be a podcast about interior design or, you know, typewriter maintenance or something like that. Okay. So
Mamma Mia.
Yeah. It's a whole podcast dedicated to the, not even the movie, which is great, like a play. Okay. So,
ooh.
Yeah. So get it right, okay. Alex, a lot on the line here.
Okay. Starting on opening day, Cole Reagans.
Woo woo.
In the two hole, the reason you can trade Brady Singer is you're buying the better veteran, more savvy, more team friendly, more less of a pretentious D-bag version of him in Marcus Stroman.
A little bit of a bounce back year this year from Stroman, yes.
Jordan Lyles and Alec Marsh. I'm cheating and only going with four because usually when they break on opening day, they only have four starters. So I have, okay. Well, for nope. Now, not add a fifth starter. I'll say they trade, okay. Brady Singer, and they go Reagans, Stroman, Lyles, Marsh.
I'm not going to let you do that. You got to give me a fifth guy. We got to.
It's not in the notes.
Oh, okay.
Who is a starting rotation? It doesn't say I have to give you five. Trying to. And if I get it wrong, I have to do a Mamma Mia podcast. I'm not giving you a fifth unless we can make it about barbecue. I will do a barbecue podcast. Yeah,
the guy, he's sitting there saying this because he doesn't want to pick somebody who's currently in their AAA rotation because he knows how terrible that's going to be. I will throw in, I can't even throw anybody in there.
Right.
Is it Veneziano? I guess maybe you start with Veneziano. This is why we've been saying they've got to get two free agents. They have to. I mean,
I know.
Even if it was Brady Singer, like let's say they didn't trade Singer and you put him in that lineup, that's a bad rotation. That's a bad rotation. You get hopefully and Marcus Stroman, I like him, but he's had some years that were not good. And so you're hoping you get the good Marcus Stroman in that situation. I don't have a better answer than that though, honestly. That looks like might be what it is, and that's gonna be crushing. So I think what really Alex is trying to say is let's keep them expectations low for next year. Maybe another learning year next year. Okay. Well, the Royals start off this week. like they did last week against the White Sox. Only this time they'll be on the road. So they get the lowly Chicago White Sox on the road. That is a good thing because it gets exponentially harder after that trip to the White Sox. They're going to come back home to face the AL West leading Houston Astros in the next weekend series. And that could get ugly, folks. Alex, tell us a little bit about the Chris Getz led Chicago White Sox who we saw earlier this week.
White Sox are 55-88. They are fourth in the American League Central. They are so good that they don't even tell you who their starters are going to be. So those starters are not announced yet. Pitchers on the White Sox staff have just 8.8 WAR, and that is barely better than the Royals. Luis Robert is having – no, it's not Robert. I will not say Robert. It's Luis Robert is having a great year. He is a borderline top five MVP candidate. And then Eloy Jimenez, Andrew Vaughn, also hitting the ball well. Hey, look, they draft a college hitter, and he's doing well. I cannot believe.
Yeah, well, and he's like – if you were picking out college hitters in the last 5 or 10 years that are doing well, he's like down the list even, and he's having a good year.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, drafting those college hitters.
You can bet on Michael Massey to hit a home run. He just destroys the White Sox for whatever reason. You can bet on Michael Massey homering in this series. I will be.
Hometown kid back in Chicago. See if he can put a couple out of the yard against a pitching staff that has been pretty bad. I mean, they've been just not good. So hopefully we can get on that. Then we come here for Houston. What looks like it's going to be quite a bleak series. Houston having a chance to maybe lengthen out that lead in the AL West, which is a tough division. It'll be a good end to that regular season for them. The Astros are really friggin' good. If you haven't figured that out, they have six regular players who have OPSs over 800, six of them. Okay. Who's the guy I'm thinking of? Yordan Alvarez. Yordan Alvarez hasn't played quite 100 games yet. I think it's like 98. He has an OPS over one. Same thing with Jose Altuve. His isn't over one, but it's really close to one. He hasn't played quite 100 games yet either. Was hurt a little bit. The guy, I mean, the lineup is insane, people. It is insane. Led by Jose Altuve and Yordan Alvarez. They also have Alex Bregman, Kyle Tucker. Their catcher's hitting right now too. I mean, it is insane how good they hit the ball. So it could be a really rough and the Royals, you know, as you know, starting rotation and bullpen is not good. Although it will be really fun because I think that should shake out to where Reagans is starting one of those games.
Ooh.
And so that'll be really fun. I think he's going to get the Friday game if my math is correct. That'll be really fun to see him go up against that lineup. Their starting pitching has maybe taken a small step back from where it was the last few years, but you know, Christian Javier has been a little bit down, but Framber Valdez is still fantastic. They just got Justin Verlander again from the Mets. You know, he's probably not the pitcher he was last time he was with Houston, but he's still a good player. So, you know, have a couple drinks before you go out to that Astros series, okay? It'll make it easier. All right, we're going to end this episode like we end every episode with our Just a Bit Outside segment. And I know Alex is excited for his first Just a Bit Outside here. Alex, you are one of the most interesting people I know, a true cowboy. Okay. What is your Just a Bit Outside for this week?
I watched Shane Gillis's Netflix special last night, and my wife is out of town. I was laying in bed by myself. Well, my dog was with me, but I was by myself laughing. I was cackling, Mike. It was one of the funniest Netflix specials I've ever seen. And I'm kind of a stand-up comedy connoisseur. I've got tickets to go see both Dave Chappelle and Burt Kreischer in person later this month. I am really excited about both those performances.
Is Kreischer the guy that takes his shirt off? Is that guy?
Yes.
Okay.
So Shane Gillis is kind of a new up and comer. Like, I think this is his first Netflix, like his first big anticipated Netflix special. So, I watched that last night, and he did not disappoint. The only thing I don't like about some of these Netflix specials is that they're less than an hour. Like, he gets done, and he just signs off. I'm like, no, no, more. I am laughing so hard. I'm going to have a six-pack by the time I'm done with this. And he tells the story, but he's got definitely an uncle. He talks about his uncle, but I think he's talked before about having a sister who has Down syndrome, and so he does a really – interesting, like a unique job of being very empathetic with families who have loved ones in their life who deal with like life altering challenges of any kind, but also brings out the humor through the joy that those people experience. And it's something that as a teacher, like, you never want to see people made fun of in any capacity, but especially in that community. And the way that he is able to be empathetic and bring out laughter through joy and celebration of people like that, it's a very cool like bit of the special. But his ability to be sensitive while he is being freaking hilarious is really, really cool. And so Shane Gillis is absolutely hysterical, one of the funniest comedians. He and Theo Von are two of my favorite guys that are, right, you know, doing it right now. But his Netflix special is outstanding.
See, I'm going to have to check that out because one of my very good friends just sent me a text kind of out of the blue. We went to the Turnpike concert the other day out at Sandstone together. And like 2 days after that, he sends me a text that says, "You've got to check out this Shane Gillis Netflix special." And I was like, what? Because we were talking about stand-up comedians at the concert. And I was like, oh, yeah. And so I'm going to have to check that out. He's a big Bert Kreischer fan as well. I could never get into Kreischer as much. It's not my style of comedy, but I'm going to have to check out this Shane Gillis guy. Have you ever seen James Acaster stuff?
Mm-mm.
Oh, Mark's going to kill you. He's going to kill you. He's going to harass you until you watch this on Netflix.
I'll do it before he gets home then. I mean, okay. Twist my arm.
And it's like four different episodes, if you will, but they're four different performances that he all performed at the, I think it's called the Edinburgh.
Does he sing when he,
No, he's not a singing guy, but he's British. Okay, so, but it's not like super dry like British comedy usually is. He's really good. Check him out. James Acaster. It's called Repertoire. It's fantastic. I'm going to check out Shane Gillis.
He looks a little like Bo Burnham. That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay. Yeah, they kind of do the tall, skinny kind of thing going on. Shane Gillis, people, check it out. It's got the Alex Duvall endorsement.
Shane Gillis will be in Kansas City in like October, the Uptown or the Midland or something like that. So he'll be
both
in town.
Great venues.
Well, if you like the Netflix special, let's go.
I don't have Netflix anymore. They kept getting me
just
for
find
sharing
a password,
my password. I'll steal Mark's password, and then we'll go check out Shane Gillis.
Like an adult.
that's why they got me off of Netflix because they were cracking down on that stuff. I'm going to go on a little
October 13th
at the Midland. Check it out, folks.
It's a Friday. Ooh.
Ooh, that might be parent teacher conference time. I'm going on my annual. I do this every year, Alex. Okay. So you may have actually heard this in the past if you're listening to the show. This is my annual gambling diatribe, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. In the state of Missouri for now several years, we have decided that instead of just accepting money that people want to give the state of Missouri, we don't. We don't want to do that. Okay. We want to throw that out and never have any money for our state to go towards, you know, things like roads and education and rural hospitals that are all closing and all that sort of thing. Again, last Missouri legislative session, one individual got to decide that Missouri was not going to adopt sports gambling and then be able to bring in all that revenue that is now going to places like Kansas and Iowa and Illinois and pretty much every other state that borders us who has legalized sports gambling. But something has changed. There is something happening. Okay. The four major, we got four professional sports teams here in Missouri, I believe. The Blues, the Cardinals, the Royals, and the Chiefs. Okay. They have gotten together in their little consortium and they are putting out petitions. They've put up four petitions that have all been accepted by the state Secretary of State for Missouri so that they can get petitions put it on and then or signed so that they can put ballot initiatives on the ballot and possibly get this into the Missouri Constitution through a ballot initiative. This is how a lot of things have been done recently in the state of Missouri because the Missouri legislature is very difficult to get things through if you don't know a lot about our state politics right now. And so hopefully very, very soon there will be a ballot initiative. This will circumvent that one lone legislator who has been stopping sports gambling from happening in the state of Missouri. So get it done, Missouri voters. Okay. We are actively hurting our state by not allowing this to happen, because guess what? People are gambling on sports in the state of Missouri every day. Okay. It's football season again, and we are just pissing this money into the sewer. Okay. We are just giving it away to other places instead of using it for our state. I don't care if you're a gambler or not. You should be for this. If you are for people being able to do what they want to do with their own money, you are for this. Okay.
You, if you're not a gambler, you should be especially
because you're getting that money.
That's less tax money you might have to pay in the future. They're going to, some gambler is going to pay the state of Missouri, and then they're going to pay you in services or in tax credits later down the line. If you don't gamble, I don't understand how you could not be voting for gambling.
It's better for you than it is for anybody else. For me, this D-gen here, who's going to throw money on a game that he's certainly going to lose. Okay. And so please, please, please be smart it's likely to make it to the ballot because there's enough people in the state who have, you know, a head on their shoulders. And so when you get there, who have brains in their heads, when it gets to that thing, be smart, vote to generate revenue for your state and allow these things to happen. So there's my annual gambling diatribe. It's like the Royals. It's not really looking any better, but we're just getting enough hope to get crushed later in the future. How's that sound?
Can I leave you with a factoid that I found?
Please do. I love factoids. I'm a history teacher like you.
Okay. According to the Texas State University, 90% of all the money in the United States has cocaine on it. Traces of cocaine were found reaching 0.006 micrograms. And it's because the green dye on dollars causes cocaine residue to stick to the bills. So there you go.
So I actually knew that one already. I'd actually heard that before somewhere. And that's what they always, I mean, my mother used to always say, if you ever touch money, wash your hands, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, why? Let me get that buzz. No, I'm kidding. wash your money, people. It's not clean. Or wash your hands after touching money.
Wash your money.
Wink. Gambling. Drugs. Money. We're talking about all of it today.
Wash my money.
Really, really family-friendly podcast we've put together here, Alex. Okay. Thank you guys for joining us. My first time hosting my wonderful co-host, Alex Duvall. We will be back next week as Marcus will still be traipsing around Europe doing European things. I fully expect him to come back with a Spanish accent because when he came back from England, all he would do is call elevators lifts. He was such a douche. Okay. So when he comes back, he's going to have some weird European haircut and, you know, call the bathroom the loo or I don't know, who knows.
Can I tell you my favorite joke about Spain before, but last thing I promise.
Yeah, man, we got time.
My favorite joke about Spain. All right. Mark's got to edit anyway. So guy goes to Spain and he goes and he sees a bullfight. He's like, man, this is really cool. And the matador wins and whatever. So he's fired up. He's seen a bullfight for the first time. And he's walking down the alley after the bullfight and he goes into a restaurant. And he gets into the restaurant and he sits down in this plate. This guy, the waiter, comes by with a plate, and whatever's on this plate looks and smells delicious. And he's like, oh my gosh, I've got to try that. So he calls his waiter over and he goes, hey, I don't know what that guy ordered, but I would like to order the same thing. And the waiter says, well, sir, you see, those are the testicles from the bullfight this afternoon. He goes, it's a rare delicacy in Spain, the bull testicles of a slain bull from a bullfight. And because there's only been, you know, one fight per day the last few weeks because tourism's down, he's the only one who gets them today. He's like, but come back tomorrow, try to get here as the fight ends, and when they take the slain bull off the thing, I'll bring them to you. He's like, all right. So he skips the bullfight the next day, and he goes straight to the restaurant. He sits there, he makes eye contact with the waiter, and pretty soon the waiter brings him over a plate. He goes, here you go. It was so much less impressive than the day before. And he goes, oh, he's like, was it like a youth bull or something that was slain? He goes, what happened? This looks nothing like the meal the gentleman ordered yesterday. And the waiter says, si, senor, sometimes the bull wins.
classic Spain joke right there. Just, you know, wonderful animal cruelty that they have going on over there. It's next level stuff. Great Spain joke. I hope Mark doesn't edit it out. I hope he leaves it in there. Thanks for joining us. We're going to come back with more fiery jokes like that, more hot takes on gambling, more Royals talk next week. Me and Alex Duvall cutting it up. You guys are probably going to want Mark to just be out of here after this. But I think I have to do Mark's part and you have to do my part here. So until next time, be good to each other.
See you later, Canada.
You say go Royals, but okay, go Royals.